out really, really soon, we're going to have some... We're going to hear from Elaine Harris, who used to be a broadcaster here at the ABC. She has just written a book about... It's called Ghost Royals. I'm not going to tell you anything else about it. You'll hear in a moment.
Hello, I'm Rick Goddard. The ABC Giving Tree Appeal is Tasmania's largest Christmas charity, raising money and collecting gifts to donate to disadvantaged and vulnerable people. I'm asking you to give what you can. Place a gift under the tree or donate money online at abc.net.au/Hobart. Proceeds from the Giving Tree Appeal go to a range of charities around Tasmania, helping you help those in need. The 2016 ABC Giving Tree.
About to hear all about the Queen, so it's only fair that we play the band Queen.
Are you gonna take me home tonight? Oh, down beside that red firelight. Are you gonna let it all hang out? Fat bottom girls, you make the rocking world go round.
So great. Fat Bottom Girls there by Queen. You're on ABC Local Radio right around Tasmania. I'm Melanie Tate, and coming up in just a moment, we're joined by an old friend of ABC Tasmania, Elaine Harris.
Ooh, why don't you come and lend an helping hand this Christmas?
The Giving Tree is nearly ready to be packed up and sent away to the families who need the gifts this Christmas. And here's your chance to lend an elfing hand. We're having an elves breakfast on Tuesday the 13th of December to pack up the whole of the Giving Tree. So, if you'd like to be part of it, register your interest at tasbreakfast@your.abc.net.au.
Come and join me for the elves breakfast and lend an elfing hand this Christmas.
Get your email in by this Friday.
You're on ABC Local Radio right around Tasmania. Now, every now and then, if you're among sort of the Republican lot of Australians, you might get to thinking that the royal family in the UK has lost its relevancy. Then a royal wedding is had, or a scandal happens, or a new Netflix series about the Queen is released, telling us that there's still a huge, huge appetite for all stories royal. Well, Elaine Harris, it will be a familiar voice to you. Elaine is an author and also a former ABC broadcaster who's been writing about the royal family for quite some time and has a new book called Ghosts Royal about the young Princess Elizabeth going through the transition of her father becoming king after the 1936 abdication. Elaine is with us now from Burnie. Hello, Elaine.
Hello to you. It's wonderful to be back.
It's so nice to have you. Elaine, where did your interest in the royal family start?
Oh, probably almost from growing up. I mean, school history, primary school history, we learned about Sir Walter Raleigh putting his cloak over a paddle for Queen Elizabeth I so that she didn't step into the puddle and didn't get her feet wet. When I was about 10 years old, and I grew up in England, as you can probably gather, we went to some sort of exhibition in the way that primary schools often didn't in those days. It wasn't contextualized, so I don't know what the full exhibition was. But I can tell you that as we sat round the edges of this great hall, I don't know if it was the town hall or quite what it was, every girl in the room got to wear Queen Victoria's crown for 2 whole seconds. And the one thing I can remember about it was, oh, wow, that's heavy. How on earth did she keep her head up? And then about 4 years later, I was at a grammar school of which Princess Margaret was the patron, and she came on a school visit. Her helicopter landed in our pony field, and the ponies had been removed, I might say. And it came on a trial run. We all got to look round the royal helicopter, very plush indeed. And the school play for that year was Toad of Toad Hall. And no rude comments from you, but I actually played Ratty. Don't you dare. And we actually had to learn the two last scenes first in order to perform them to Princess Margaret. So I've never managed to shake the royal hand, though I did interview her ex-husband many years later. And my guide dog of the day plunged into his fish pond in the snow on the day I wasn't carrying a towel. Look, there's always been some association. There's always been some interest.
Well, that's the thing. When you're growing up in England, how close are people, you know, everyday people like us, how close are you to the actual royal family?
Genetically, not at all.
Are they constantly opening local fairs? And I mean, are they visible?
I did dress up the day the Queen drove down our street in the Silver Jubilee year, but I'm sure she didn't notice. My auntie came and sat, she's very arthritic, poor darling, and she came and sat in an upstairs window as the Queen drove past, and her comment was afterwards, she looked like a wax doll. Oh. And I think that's just probably because she sat perfectly straight, she waved, she accepted a posy from a child. I had tea in the Royal Mews in 1981. I think it was 1981. It could have been 1982. We went to, I think it was the Golden Jubilee of guide dogs in Britain.
Oh, right.
And then we all processed down Pall Mall and we all had rather revolting prepackaged tea and sandwiches in the Royal Mews. Princess Alexandra was present. But I didn't get to meet her, probably because my hat was too posh or something,
right.
And they didn't, you know. So they were always there, I suppose, to answer your question. They were just part of life. You expected them in the headlines. I got the day off for the ill-fated Charles and Diana wedding. And the night before the wedding, I got off the bus and walked down the street. And the church bells were ringing, and apparently church bells were rung all over the country. It was absolutely astonishing. So that moments like that, they just stay with you. They're part of the fabric of who you are, and part of the fact that although I'm an Australian citizen and proud of it, I have dual nationality, and you might take the girl out of Britain, but you can't quite take Britain out of the girl.
Well, before we go on to talking about the book itself, I can't let it slide finding out what Lord Snowden was like when you interviewed him, or was he Anthony Armstrong Jones then?
I actually met Lord Snowden at a dinner after a rather mad pantomime. I did all the coverage in 1981 for my radio station for the International Year of People with Disabilities. And at the time, he said to me, and I've no idea why or what I did to carry favour, but he said to me, look, if there's anything I can do ever to help, just call. And this was in January. Come December, I thought, okay, well, it's either do or die here. And I picked up the phone and I rang. And he granted me an interview. I went on the train to London, dressed up to the nines, and for once in my life, I was given coffee in a real cap and not a cardboard pretend one. So I must have looked the part. Arrived at his house, where he was finishing a photography session, and introduced me to this wonderful hairdresser. We recorded an interview, and then I might tell you, you promise not to tell anybody.
I won't tell anyone.
He made the best gin and tonic I have ever tasted. And then
I'll bet he looks like he knows how to put a cocktail together, doesn't he?
And then we all had to play Ring a Ring of Roses with his small daughter Frances before she went to bed. So there was the Earl and Lady Lucy and Lady Frances and poor little me kneeling in a circle playing Ring a Ring of Roses before Frances went to bed. That was absolutely glorious.
Wow, and that's so English, isn't it? Playing Ring a Ring of Roses before going to bed. My guest is Elaine Harris. Elaine is an author, and you'll know her as a former ABC broadcaster as well, if you're wondering why her voice is so familiar to you. Elaine's got a new book out called Ghosts Royal, which looks at the young Princess Elizabeth and Margaret as their dad becomes the king. Elaine, why tell this story? What was it about this particular story that inspired you?
There were two things. I had started writing for a US online magazine, and I had this idea of the fact that when I was 10 years old, I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. Even when after I graduated from university, I still had no idea. And then on the anniversary of her accession in February 2012, the Diamond Jubilee year, I didn't hear it because I was actually in this very building where I sit now preparing for my own program that day. But my husband heard an interview either on Radio National or elsewhere, I'm not sure. And somebody was saying, look, you have to remember that, yes, this is a day of celebration, but it's also, by its very nature, the anniversary of the death of her beloved father. And she was indeed very, very close to her father. And it suddenly hit me, my goodness, to know your destiny for all of those years and then realize that, in fact, you could only fulfill your destiny at a terrible price. And I think that, to me, was the key point, that the fact that yes, it was glittering, it was dynamic, it was also jolly hard work by all accounts, but it's also the makings of a tragedy.
Now, you've actually written about this moment, and you're going to share some of that with us, Elaine.
I'll read you the passage where I tried to capture that. The book opens with the Queen in her drawing room at the end of the Diamond Jubilee with a battered old diary in her lap. That's artistic license, I dare say, that the Queen's diaries aren't battered at all. And then the fact that she doesn't need to open it to remember what she wrote. Then I have a scene in the Princess's bedroom where she's talking to her sister, and everything, about 95% of what's in the book actually did happen. It just didn't necessarily happen on that day. This did, however. Princess Margaret, when she asked if Elizabeth would one day be queen, said, poor you. And that's well documented. So then I go on to think about the fact that, well, what would I do if I received staggering news? And what I would do probably is to go out into my garden to think, because that's my thinking place when it's not weather like today. And then I would think, first of all, of something quite different to get away from it. And then I would try and come to terms with what had happened. And here's a very, very brief passage where I've tried to actually capture that. Princess Elizabeth needed two things. First, something to help her forget about today's news, and then, a little later, the chance to think about what it would all mean when her time finally came. She found it hard to imagine that day in the future when she would be magically transformed from Princess Elizabeth into Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. It seemed almost like Cinderella when her fairy godmother waved her wand and declared, "You shall go to the ball." She knew it would change her life forever. Except, it wouldn't be magical at all, would it? How could it be? In order for her to become queen, Papa would have to die, and she could not bear to think about that. She didn't believe she ever would.
It's very affecting. It reminds me, I just recently have been watching The Crown on Netflix, Elaine. Have you seen it?
I haven't. You know, everybody's been talking about it and telling me how wonderful it is. And I think I'm going to have to write to Santa, because no, I haven't seen it. I've seen Bertie and Elizabeth that was made some years ago. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Eileen Atkins, who plays Queen Mary in that, apparently plays Queen Mary in The Crown. Mm-hmm. I've read, I can't say I've read every biography ever written, but I've read plenty of them, believe me. They don't all agree, and that's something else I deal with in the back of the book. But I read enough to get, to try and sort the wheat from the chaff, and get enough to allow me to state the facts without being boring while trying to capture the characters, not just what we know of them today, but what they were like then, what intimated who and what they would become in the future.
Elaine, this book takes us behind the scenes, and as you said, 95% of it is true. How much of it is from your imagination?
Well, most of the words are in my imagination. There's a scene where the princess goes down to the kitchens to see Bobo, whose real name was Margaret MacDonald. She was a nursery maid who later went on to become personal maid both to the princess and then to Queen Elizabeth. In fact, she lived out her days with the Queen and was apparently a frightful snob in her later years and a bit of a dragon, I gather, but I don't think she was then. And I have them going across to the stables in the palace mews, feeding apples to the horses and talking about things as they are. All of that is entirely imaginary, but I've tried to keep it in character because, of course, the Queen, and as Princess Elizabeth, adored horses, still does. She was still riding in 2012. I don't know if she is now. And nobody, not even her daughter, I have read, dare suggest to her that it would be safer if she wore a riding hat, because she never does. So although that piece is imaginary, it's potentially possible. The fact that she hated handicrafts, like me, is also true. The fact that she was not particularly good with maths and numbers and sorting out money is also true. So woven in all throughout the book are the little nuances that are true if you know where to look. For example, if you probably noticed, she says, "Oh, Margaret," a couple of times when she's actually with her sister. And apparently that was her pet phrase. Whenever Margaret was outrageous, "Oh, Margaret.
You're going to love the crown.
You can almost hear it, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Elaine Harris, this book, it's only quite short and it's illustrated. Can we take from this that it's aimed at young people around the age of the girls at the time?
That's a very good point. It was written originally for children, but do you know, there's been as much, if not more, interest from older readers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that means you and I, everybody who isn't a child, really. Mm-hmm. And dare one say, particularly the female of the species, as there has from children. So, yes, it started life as a children's book, but like my favourite children's books, it's written on many different levels. So mm-hmm. you could read it as a straight children's book, almost a fairy story, if mm-hmm. you like. But you can also read it as an adult and pick up all those nuances mm. I just talked about.
Why are we still so fascinated by the royal family?
Why am I still so fascinated?
Why are we, just as a culture, do you think?
I don't know. Once upon a time, I would have said the magic and mystery. And I suspect where the Queen is concerned, that's possibly still partly true. In fact, my husband and I discuss this often. Will this magic continue when the Queen is no longer with us? I can't answer that. I think it's the glamour. Unfortunately, or not, depending on one's point of view, they're now almost on a par with Hollywood celebrities, mm. and people are always fascinated by those. And let's face it, celebrity, wealth, fame are always pursued. I dare say it's partly that. It could also be, I think, that whatever you do, it's still there. That sense of history, that sense of pomp and circumstance. Prince William broke away from the mould in 2011 when he had cars and not carriages for the wedding, which, don't tell him I said so, but I thought was rather sad. but there's that sense of ceremony. There's still the changing of the guard. There's still the official opening of Parliament in London once a year, the state opening of Parliament, the only time when the people from the House of Commons are permitted into the House of Lords. So I think it's that mixture of glamour and wealth and celebrity mixed with the history. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And Elaine, I guess I'd ask you, Australia is now your adopted country and the movement has been starting again recently to make Australia a republic. Now, one of the glorious things about being an ex-ABC broadcaster is you can tell us your opinion on monarchy versus republicanism. If there was a referendum, which way would you probably go?
Ooh, that depends. I can't answer honestly. I may vote no, but by the same token, it does honestly depend on what proposal has been put forward for the future. For the moment, I haven't seen one that isn't so politicised it could be. Mm-hmm. Well, let's put it this way. I'm not comfortable about what's just happened in America. I would hate to see us go that way. So it would have to be a convincing argument to change the system and to change it with something that was fair and open. Does that work?
Yes, absolutely. Well, Elaine, it's been lovely chatting with you this afternoon about the book. All the very best with it. What's the best way for people to be able to find it?
At the moment, the book is available in most Tasmanian bookshops. It's we started off with an Amazon publication, which if you're overseas, might be the best way to do it. Here, let me tell you that the postage is so vicious that you really wouldn't. Then we were very, very, very lucky to have someone contact 40 South in Hobart. They and I, between us, reworked it, re-edited it, and added a little more polish, and 40 South have published it. So now in Tasmania, it's available through 40 South directly or through bookshops. Hopefully next year we'll be able to make that Australia-wide.
Elaine, congratulations, and thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you kindly. I will tell you honestly, when I first picked up the hardback copy of this book, A, I wanted to hug it, and B, I heard this little voice saying, did I do that?
And you can meet Elaine Harris at Not Just Books on Wilson Street in Burnie from 10 a.m. this Saturday, where she'll be signing books. Ghosts Royal, it's called. Give it a go. It's rather delightful if you love your royal history. To stay in Queen mode, here's one that goes out to Elizabeth Windsor, also known as ER2.